702 on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on the Prime Media Plus app
and on DStv channel 856.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report. Whose Mkhonto is it anyway? The MK and the ANC battle it out in court. The AKA Tebello Tibs Motswane suspects back in court. And as you heard, the state is making its case and it seems they may be granted bail. And the Public Enterprises Committee in Parliament expected to finalize its report on the Takatso Consortium deal. We have an EWN reporter there who's going to give us the latest. That's what we have and more on the Midday Report this afternoon with me, Khomotso Modise, in for Mandy Wiener.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report right here on 702. It's 12:08 and that means it's time for you and I to spend some time going through the stories of the day. My name is Khomotso Modise and I'm in for Mandy Wiener. It's a really court heavy show today. Quite a bit's playing out in the courts, both in Johannesburg or Gauteng, I should say, and in KZN. And all eyes are on what's going on in the Durban High Court. Those arguments being made on the ANC and MK logo dispute. And I can see Advocate Dalimpofu is there arguing his case there, or I should say the MK's case. And I think we should dip in first before we go to our reporters who are on the ground.
Then, my lord, on the 7th, the rest we know from the judgment of yesterday. But on the 7th, then the party gets registered, right? This time they already know these people have infringed our trademark. They've actually infringed it twice in their gazetting. In the first time, they infringed our alleged trademark by putting two logos. And now they've done it again. Nothing. They don't come to this court. They say to your lordship, no, this court has exclusive jurisdiction on this matter. Which means at that stage, once they had realized the infringement, then the matter should have been triggered. But here's the and let's again be generous, my lord, and say that at that stage they did not even have the trademark, as we know, because the trademark was only assigned in September, right? Fair enough. But what they did do before the effective date of that assignment, assuming it's valid for the purposes of this argument, is they take they do the right thing, by the way, by invoking the provisions of Section 16 of the Electoral Act and complain about the infringement of the trademark and the passing off. Your lordship, again, with the greatest respect, hit the nail on the head in questioning my learned friend, Mr. Ramogale. Because Mr. Ramogale, with respect, it tells about Coca-Cola. This has nothing to do with Coca-Cola. When we talk jurisdiction, your lordship knows from Taba, the leading case on jurisdiction, paragraph 75 of Taba, it says, pleadings, or rather, jurisdiction must be judged according to the pleadings. So these pleadings don't have Coca-Cola. These pleadings have two political parties, the African National Congress versus the MK party.
That's Advocate Dalimpofu. They're arguing on behalf of the MK party. And I should say that the matter that's being heard in the Durban High Court today is particularly on the logo dispute. This is different from what we heard yesterday in the Electoral Court, that ruling coming from the Johannesburg High Court. That was based on how the MK party was formed. And we know that the Electoral Court ruled in favour of the MK, or I should say in favour of the IEC. Today's matter, however, is on trademark. And the ANC essentially says the MK party is using the logo of its former parliamentary wing, and they're using their name, which they claim to have rights to. Now, on the ground for Eyewitness News is our reporter, Nhlanhla Maba. So he's been there since the morning. Nhlanhla, thank you so much for joining us. I think let's just start with what's been going on outside court, because it seems earlier on in the day, Nhlanhla, it seemed like there were more MK supporters present, but now I'm seeing a lot more green and gold. What's the situation there?
Well, I can tell you for a fact, Khumuso, that the majority of supporters here are MK supporters. In fact, on my way to court, met them marching from the Durban station coming to the Durban High Court. It's a hype of activities, really, Khumuso. Like you mentioned, the amount of court cases. I mean, I can tell you that in this court case, in this court precinct alone, Khumuso, there is that Zandile Kumete case, there is the AKA case, there is this case that we are here for the ANC. So firstly, in court, the ANC was the first to present its head of arguments and its lawyer telling the court that, you know, that the ANC and the Umkhonto Sizwe will forever be linked, saying that, in fact, this MK party, which has now been formed by former President Jacob Zuma, should in fact stop using the name and the logo belonging to its former armed wing. But Khumuso, it doesn't come as a surprise, really. You'd recall that in December, ANC lawyers wrote to MK lawyers asking them to, you know, stop, for the party to stop using this particular logo and name, but the MK party refused, which is why now the ANC has brought this matter in court. It's a packed courtroom, Khumuso, with former President Jacob Zuma, of course, with some MK leaders on the right side, and then on the left side, you've got the ANC Secretary General, Sigile Mbalula, Provincial Chairperson Sboniso Duma, and other ANC supporters in court. And we see now that after the ANC's lawyer, MK lawyer, the advocate Dalimbos, is now, you know, dropping those arguments on behalf of the MK party.
Yeah. The former president, did he say anything? I know there's been a lot happening on the sidelines outside of what's happening in court.
There was only a short 15-minute adjournment after the ANC presented its arguments. The former president, escorted by members of the Presidential Protection Service, they flanked him out of court with his daughter, Tutuzi Nasambula Zuma, to one of the VIP unit cars, which are parked outside court as we speak, Khumuso. And then he sat there for about 10 minutes for that tea break. He was then escorted by his security team inside again. And then we saw also the ANC going inside. That's when Dalimpof now took to the podium. But he's not said anything to the media, but we are anticipating an address from him to MK supporters, because just outside court, Khumuso, there's that stage that has been set up by MK members, but also a heavy police presence, including members of the SARS, members of the Metro Police, and the town assault team from the Presidential Protection Service. I can tell you that if there are two things here, is these two political parties, but also what is seen to be a heavy security presence. But also this support on the MK side also doesn't come as a surprise, given yesterday's ruling by the Electoral Court in favor of the MK party. So members of the MK party still celebrating that march in their numbers to court.
And Nhlanhla, do we know what the argument by the MK party is? I mean, I know that the ANC's argument is, you know, based a lot on the historical significance of the name and the logo. But what's the MK's argument?
The MK's argument, Khumuso, really, is that they actually believe that they still have, you know, the right to can use the name. In fact, the logo belonging to the former armed wing of the ANC. Basically, also, Khumuso, what they've been saying is that, given the fact that the ANC disbanded Umkhonto Wesizwe, not only once, they say that they saw it as an opportunity, that it's a name they can also use. But they are basically saying that on this particular case, the ANC is trying to move them from this. But the MK party seems, Khumuso, not to be backing down from this particular case. They are basically saying that the ANC lacks the requisite locals in this case, that they can, you know, take this particular name and logo from them.
Sure.
But for the ANC, really, Khumuso, they maintain that it's wrong for the MK party to use this name and logo, which is linked to the AMWI. And
sure.
It's because, Khumuso, that also forming part of the MK party are former members of the Umkhonto Wesizwe itself, but also mostly members of the disbanded Umkhonto Wesizwe Military Veterans Association. And hence why the party believes that the mere fact that some of those who struggled under Mkhonto we see have the right to use this particular name. But of course, we are in court, and those kinds of arguments are continuing throughout the community.
Sure. That's Eyewitness News reporter Ntlantla Mabaso out at the Durban High Court, and he's following this case very closely. It's going to be interesting to hear what the MK's case is here. The application, of course, has been brought by the ANC, but we can see Advocate Dali Mpofu is continuing with his submissions before court. And I don't know what you make of that. I mean, do you think that it's enough for the ANC to say this name and logo has historical significance for us, and therefore no one else should be allowed to use it, trademark or not? Get in touch with us. You can send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702. And if you're in the Western Cape, it's 072-567-1567.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
So someone who is better versed with the law and knows how this works is Ulrich Ruh. He is an attorney, founder of Ulrich Ruh and Associates. Ulrich, thank you so much for joining us. Just help us make sense of this, because I've been going through the ANC's papers, and a lot of the argument is based on the history of MK, saying everyone knows that the MK name and the trademark is linked to them, or the MK name and logo, I should say, is linked to them. Everyone knows that the MK and the ANC are inseparable. But is that a plausible argument to make in court?
Well, you know, one must look at the facts of the matter, and that is that Mkhonto we Sizwe was disbanded in 1993. So the first argument that the MK is going to prefer is whether they in fact enjoy any rights in terms of our law to the use of that logo, given that Mkhonto we Sizwe has been disbanded. Then secondly, when one looks at trademark infringement, you need to look at whether, firstly, there is a registered trademark and whether there is any protection enjoyed by the ANC in terms of that trademark, and whether the ANC has sole and exclusive rights to that trademark. Then secondly, one needs to look at the logo itself and whether it would cause any confusion when a reasonable person has to look at the logos. Now, I think it's clear to see that when one looks at the logo of the MK party compared to Mkhonto we Sizwe, they are strikingly similar, and it will definitely cause confusion amongst a reasonable person if they were to look at the two logos. So it's all going to come down to whether the ANC can successfully prove to the court that they have a registered trademark for that logo, that the ANC is the owner of that registered trademark, and whether the trademark is still in place given the disbandment of Mkhonto we Sizwe in 1993. So quite a technical argument that the court is going to listen to today. Mm. In my view, I think the ANC is going to struggle because I don't think that they enjoy protection under that trademark anymore.
And, yeah, you know, because I think the question that most of us have, Ulrich, is whether an entity, and in this instance it's the ANC, do they have to be to have a registered trademark in place? Or is there case law where we've seen people win without having the actual trademark, but just because the name or the logo is directly associated with that entity?
Yes, that is referred to in legal terms as passing off, and passing off is where you've made use of a certain item or trademark or piece of equipment, and then another person copies that, which causes confusion amongst the general public. So they could have protection under that segment of the law in terms of passing off, but again, one needs to first determine whether they enjoy any protection. Is the ANC still affiliated with Mkhonto we Sizwe? Are they solely responsible for the creation thereof? Does Mkhonto we Sizwe still play an active role within the ANC structures today? And I think all of those questions are going to be answered in the negative, and that's where their problem is going to lie in opposing the registration of the MK party's logo.
All right, let's leave it there. It's Ulrich Roux there, founder and MD at Ulrich Roux and Associates. It's very interesting what the ANC has been doing on social media. They've been uploading videos, and one caught my attention. Let's take a listen to what they've been doing.
There are many people who feel that it is useless and futile for us to continue talking peace and non-violence against a government whose reply is only savage attacks on an unarmed and defenseless people.
That sound from a video that's been uploaded on Twitter, on the ANC's Twitter, I should say X, now it's called. And it's interesting because they're trying to remind their followers of the link and the correlation between Umkhonto. And I don't think any of us have forgotten about that. But what's playing out in the Durban High Court is really an issue of law. And it's going to be interesting to see what the findings will be in that matter.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
This is the Midday Report. My name is Khumutso Modise, and I'm in for Mandy Wiener. A very interesting story that's playing out also in Durban, in KZN, is the bail application of the five men accused of the murder of Keenan, a.k.a. Forbes, and Tebello Tibbs Motswane. They are making that appearance. It's a bail application. The state is making its case. And we have Oren Singh here, who's going to help us make sense of that. He's been following the story closely. Welcome, Oren. Thank you so much for joining us. I think my first question for you is that I've been following these bail hearings a bit, and the sense that I'm getting here is that at least two of these men are already out on bail for different matters or separate matters. And the argument that that's been made by their lawyers is that because they've been so, you know, they've been cooperating, they've been attending proceedings while they've been out on bail, there is no reason to deny them bail in this matter. Is that right?
That's correct, Khumutso. At least two of the men implicated who are appearing before the Durban Magistrates Court today. There are five men appearing, two in Eswatini that have been arrested in connection with this case. At least two of them are currently out on bail. I think one on murder charges and one on robbery with aggravated circumstances. And you correctly pointed out, so that they're attorneys believe that because our clients have been released on bail in these other matters, which are separate and some linked to this case, there should be no reason as to why the court shouldn't award them bail or grant them bail. We're yet to hear a lot more from the state. We heard this morning the state is opposing bail for all the five accused. And we heard from an affidavit deposed by a warrant officer, Kamaran Pillay, who's the investigating officer in this case. And he's detailing evidence as to how they managed to link or allegedly link these five men to the murder of Keenan, aka Forbes, and Tebello Tibbs Motswane. I think the interesting thing here, Khumutso, is that the one accused, Mziwitemba Gwabeni, who is the alleged paymaster who paid his co-accused about 133,000 rand each, right, allegedly, the state alleges that they all met at his home. Now, when I was in Durban last week, we traveled to his home. Mm. It's located in Cowies Hill. Not that extravagant. Quite some nice fancy cars parked outside a double-story yellow house. And when we got to the gate, we wanted to speak to some of his family members who respectfully declined, given what's happening in the court case. But the state is alleging that the day after the murder, which was on the 10th of February last year, these men, all five accused, allegedly gathered at Gwabeni's home, and he there transferred money into their accounts, allegedly.
Okay.
So the state is basically pinning everything in terms of the way this sort of hit was carried out on Gwabeni as the alleged paymaster / mastermind in this whole case.
Okay. But that forms part of the merits of this case, as far as I understand. Mm. And we are dealing with bail. What's the state trying to prove here? Are they trying to prove the strength of their case as a reason for bail to be denied?
That's what I think they're trying to do, Khumotso, but we both know that it doesn't just come down to the strength of the case and the evidence that you put forward in a bail application. The bail application, you have to actually present, you know, strong evidence as to why these people are flight risks.
Yes.
And we know that the state is in possession of all the accused passports, except for the two men who are in Eswatini currently. And they're trying to extradite those men back. So as to whether the state is actually going to put forward a proper sort of proper evidence, in a sense that it's gonna deter the magistrate from awarding these guys bail,
yeah,
is yet to be seen. We haven't heard it thus far this morning,
yeah,
and we're just gonna have to wait. I think one more interesting thing, Khumotso, is that they've got really good attorneys. I mean, most of the people representing the accused are advocates, and so they know their way around the law. And they're going to know what needs to be presented in a bail application and what the magistrate will consider when granting them bail.
Right. Arun Singh, EWN reporter, following that story remotely. And I must say that it's important when we consider bail that the factors here are that the posture of the law is that bail is, or an arrest is, just to ensure that people actually make it to court and attend their court proceedings. And so if the court can establish that the accused will still come to court, even though they are out on bail, there isn't really another reason to keep them behind bars. You've heard from time to time the statement that bail is not meant to be a punishment, but it's meant to, or arrest is not meant to be a punishment, but it's to ensure that the accused actually comes to court.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
This is 702. Welcome back to the Midday Report. My name is Khumotso Modise. I'm in for Mandy Wiener. Quite a bit that's happening on the legal front. A lot has been happening in the Durban High Court. And I think we may have a voice note or two. Do we have a voice note? We don't have a voice note on that. But we do see Advocate Dalimpofu still arguing on behalf of the MK. And of course, that matter is regarding the trademark. And as you heard in the EWN bulletin, they are on top of that, covering that story both outside court and inside. But another interesting court matter that's playing out in the Pretoria High Court is the story of a ruling that was made last year regarding Eskom's obligation to end load shedding in a certain for certain entities, right? So the Pretoria High Court ruled that load shedding is actually unlawful or unconstitutional, and gave directives that certain entities, including schools, clinics, police stations, and other critical public facilities should be exempted from load shedding. Eskom then went back to the Pretoria High Court to appeal this ruling. And I seem to remember the Electricity Minister, Kosien Suramokopa, having a lot to say about which entities should be prioritized and which should not be. Our reporter, EWN reporter Tabisa Koba, is out at the Pretoria High Court, and he joins us now live. Tabisa, just take us through some of the arguments that you've been hearing today.
Good afternoon, Khumotso. Well, Khumotso, as you said, today it was argument for leave to appeal that judgment that you just mentioned, that said that government should take reasonable steps to ensure that schools, police stations, clinics, and other critical public facilities are exempted from load shedding. So one of the main arguments, Khumotso, is that this came from the Eskom legal team, is that this would be very, very expensive for the power utility, and that obviously this, because it will cut into the budget of the power utility, it will also disrupt the energy action plan. Now, this, the energy action plan, is a long-term plan that Eskom and obviously other states of government have to actually resolve this issue. But also another argument put forward by the Eskom and the state's the government lawyers is that the order made by Judge Norman Davis, who made the initial order, is that it was vague in terms of the fact that, as you said, the judge said that the electricity minister should take steps to ensure that reasonable measures are taken to exempt these facilities from load shedding. So they said that this is a very vague order. It doesn't necessarily say that There are 20 respondents here, Khomotso, the electricity minister, the minister of public enterprises, ESCOM, the minister of finance, Sir Ramaphosa, a lot of people. So they say that this order doesn't necessarily say, you, Sir Ramaphosa, have to do this. You, electricity minister, have to do this. You, ESCOM, have to do this. So they're saying that, you know, this order is very vague, and they believe that the Supreme Court of Appeal or a different court might find a different, might come to a different ruling.
All right. So they are not saying, or they're not challenging the fact that load shedding is unconstitutional for these entities, schools, police stations. They're not challenging that. They're okay with the declaration that it is unconstitutional.
Yes. It's from the arguments, Khomotso, they're not challenging that fact. But what they are challenging, Khomotso, is one. You remember that there was a timeline. It was 60 days when that order was made. So they are challenging that. You know, to solve load shedding is going to take much longer than 60 days, and that, you know, the policies required, they're very wide-ranging. And they're saying that actually government does have a plan in terms of the energy action plan to solve load shedding. So we are heading in the right, in the same direction, that we do recognize that schools and public facilities and everyone in South Africa should have access to electricity. However, we are just differing on in terms of how we're going to achieve that. And they feel that the timeline set by the court is way too short, and it would be very, very expensive, not just for ESCOM, but also for the government.
All right. That's EWN reporter Thabiso Koba out at the Pretoria High Court. And that application is for leave to appeal. So what will happen after this is that if they are granted leave, the matter will be heard in the appeals court.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Welcome back. This is the Midday Report. My name is Khomotso Modise, and I'm in for Mandy Wiener. We are taking your WhatsApps and your voice notes on 072-702-1702. If you're in the Western Cape, it's 072-567-1567. Let's shift our focus now to this story. So you may remember the Usindiso fire, very tragic scenes in the Johannesburg CBD, 77 people losing their lives. It was in August last year. And there is an ongoing inquiry on that matter. But something else that's also happening is someone has been charged for that fire. And he appeared in the Johannesburg Magistrates Court. This is a young man who actually confessed to the crime, if you may remember. Alpha Ramoshwana, EWN reporter, is at the Johannesburg Magistrates Court. Alpha, just remind us, because you are following the inquiry and you were following, or you are following, the court matter. Remind us of the confession made by this young man. It's Thembiso Mdlalose.
Yes, good afternoon, Khomotso. Thembiso Mdlalose, a 29-year-old man from Soweto. Inquiry.
Okay, it seems...
Yeah,
it seems the line there isn't great, Alpha. I'm just going to ask you to move around so that we can hear you better.
I was saying, Khomotso, he made the first confession at the Usindiso fire inquiry, and that's where he told a panel of commissioners that he was trying to get rid of a body that he claims he murdered or strangled to death, and he was trying to set the body on fire. And then after that confession, he made a second confession to the police and the National Prosecuting Authority, and that's when he was arrested and taken to court, you know. And his court proceedings has been very, very much delayed, Khomotso. I guess we're seeing another case that's going to take months or even years to conclude or go to trial because of the delays we're seeing. He appeared 2 weeks ago, and that was postponed because the prosecutor was not present and the docket was locked up in the prosecutor's office. Mm. And today the case has been postponed once again, because today his legal team, the defense, was nowhere to be seen. They were not in court, so it was again moved to the 2nd of April. So I guess we're going to be seeing more and more delays in this case, Khomotso. But at the moment, we do know that Thembiso Mdlalose's lawyers, the alleged Usindiso arsonist, are planning on challenging the confession. They say that when he made the confession, his lawyers were not present. There was no legal advisor to advise him on the implications of him making the confession. And we'll see how they're going to argue their matter. His lawyer has also questioned whether or not he was sober during the confession. They've also questioned, you know, whether or not he was forced to make such a confession. As you know, Khumutso, if one is forced to make a confession, then it could be deemed inadmissible in court. So that is what we're going to be seeing in the next few weeks in court.
Of course, there is nothing or no provision in law that people should be legally represented before they do confess. But Alpha, just help us make sense. Just remind us of the charges, because he's facing a charge of arson, murder, and what else?
Yes, he's facing charges of arson, 76 charges of murder.
All right.
Well, so it's a number of charges that he's facing, and you can imagine 76 people died. So 76 charges, you know, of murder, and a lot more of attempted murder. Mm. And his lawyers also, you know, in previous confessions have said that it's unfair.
Sure. Okay. That line is not great. That is EWN's Alpha Ramoshwana. He's at the Johannesburg Magistrates Court at the case against Thembiso Mdlalose, the 29-year-old man who confessed to starting the fire at the Usindiso building. And Alpha Ramoshwana will be keeping an eye on that story. But it's interesting. You heard it's charges of murder, arson, as well as attempted murder. And as the matter continues to play out in the Magistrates Court, you will get updates in our EWN bulletins.
Song, because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
A good day, Khumutso. I think the ANC is right when it says MK is its trademark. Yes, it is its trademark, but it's not a registered trademark. Since it's not a registered trademark, anyone have got the right to use the word MK. So I think the ANC is confusing the difference between a trademark and a registered trademark. A trademark doesn't have protection, whereas a registered trademark have got a protection. Thanks, David.
And that's what's being argued in the Durban High Court. Of course, the ANC is saying, we don't want to confuse voters. This is crucial. We're going into elections. And MK is ours. It's always been affiliated and associated with us. And there's absolutely no reason to allow the MK party to continue using it. But I can tell you that Advocate Dalimpofu is making arguments against that. And we continue to keep you updated on that story.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So let's go on over to Parliament. The Public Enterprises Committee agreeing to recommend for the Special Investigating Unit to look into the now collapsed SAA Takatso Consortium deal. We know that that's ongoing and we're just waiting to hear whether the SIU will be investigating that. But at the same time, the committee has been working on a report on the complaint from the former Director General of the department, that's Kotatso Kakudi. And it seems that the report is now ready, EWN's parliamentary report. Babalo Ndenze is following that story and he joins us now live. Babalo, do we have a report now?
Yes, Khumutso, indeed. The committee's report, now this is a report that deals with the petition by the former DG on allegations of irregularities in the cancelled deal. Now that report has been adopted by the committee and now the committee will be, and that report also recommends that the SIU and additionally, or a competent body is one of the additions I think the members also added. So either the SIU or a competent body to investigate this deal further. Now, that report has been adopted by the committee and will now go to the National Assembly for it to, you know, also adopt before, you know, it can go to the Speaker's office where the Speaker will then, you know, consider this request to, you know, request the SIU, which will then at some stage end up with the President, you know, to proclaim that investigation. Now, that the committee has adopted this report and it also debated issues around the report, you know, on how certain things happened in the deal and some of the allegations by the former DG and why Rand Merchant Bank was selected without it being, you know, going out to tender or being tested in the market. Mm. That's another key issue that they want investigated, as well as the alleged forged signature of the former DG who did denies that, you know, these memorandums that the committee keeps referring to, that his signature was on these memorandums. And these memorandums were the ones that were approving the selection of RMB, for example, to be a transaction advisor. So the committee is done with this report. And they also touched on another issue. There's been a lot of correspondence between the committee chairperson and Minister Pravin Gordhan, you know, and they also touched on this correspondence and some members of the committee saying, if the minister wants to take this report, you know, on review, because this is the report that will ultimately, you know, lead to any formal request to the SIU and any legal review or threats of taking the matter to court, the members of the committee are saying the minister can go ahead if he wants to take that approach.
And just remind us why there's so much scrutiny on this Takatso deal. As far as I know and I remember, this deal was touted as the answer for SAA's woes. Why is there scrutiny? Why an investigation? Is there a suggestion that there may have been some dodgy dealings?
Yes, there's definitely a suggestion that there has been, or let me rather quote the chairperson, something untoward when it comes to this transaction. Issues around the valuation of SAA when it was, you know, offered for sale, 51% for sale. And this was at the height of COVID, Khomotso. And, you know, the airlines were basically grounded at the time and there was nothing much happening. The only flights that were happening at the time when SAA was really offered for sale were these, you know, repatriation flights that were related to cargo and PPE at the time. And members really questioned the valuation as well as the process that has been followed. And, you know, some members of the committee supported the privatization or partial privatization of SAA, but others, even from the ANC, are opposed to selling this to a strategic equity partner. So there are differences, you know, politically on the sale of this deal, as well as questions over the process followed and whether the parliament should have been alerted before the minister went on this process, as well as the valuation, which at the time was almost a ceremonial 51 rands, which was, you know, quite controversial at the time, which was, you know, quite an issue at the time with some members of the committee. But as well as funding from the strategic equity partner, Khomotso.
Sure. And just very quickly remind us what happens now with this report. Where does it go?
Well, it goes to the National Assembly either tomorrow or before it ends. Parliament rises this week. So the committee wants this to be processed as soon as possible by the National Assembly before the SIU can come into the picture.
That's Baba Londenze, EWN Parliamentary Reporter.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So we're expecting an announcement from the Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Khanyago sometime this afternoon at around 3 p.m., I believe. And, I mean, you know, it's been 3 days of meetings, of MPC meetings. A lot of predictions are out in the air, but someone here who can help us or give us more informed predictions is economist Mielani Mkabela. Mielani, maybe let's just start with what your prediction is. I'm hearing, and the polls are saying, that the Reserve Bank is likely to hold rates again. Do you agree?
I agree with that. We forecast a repo rate hold for March MPC, and we as well look at a repo rate hold mainly for May, like MPC, where we can probably look at reviewing the July MPC as statistical numbers comes to the fore. With regard to our benchmark, we as well get that retail statistics dropped by 2.1% for South Africa. And then we have as well investment confidence that is lower. We have business and consumer confidence being lower as well. So if inflation is sitting at 5.6%, that is still manageable in the crisis that we are facing within the target brackets of 3 to 6%. Even though above midpoint at 4.5, but I believe that there is enough reasonable pragmatic grounds that the MPC will still have to make and make sure that we are having a repo rate hold.
Last week, Mielani, we saw CPI rising for a second consecutive month to 5.3%. How do we expect that to contribute to the MPC's decision?
the MPC, like the inflation moved from to 5.3 and now at 5.6. But what I'm highlighting is, in a crisis, it is still within the target bracket. It's not outside the 6% that we are supposed to be within. So if it is within 3 to 6%, even if it is above our midpoint, but I still expect the MPC to hold the repo rate unchanged, regardless, actually.
All right. And do we foresee a cut in the near future?
We are not really forecasting a cut within March, January, March, and May. But like, we are looking at reviewing July, depending on the statistics that we'll have, whether it could be retail statistics, and then at the same time looking at inflation statistics. So that could be a good guide, because it's not really a point of thinking that we need a cut, but sure, we are guided by the numbers. The numbers are still manageable at the current point. And if things continue in this way, while the global situation, remain well managed, because when you look at United States and Europe, you find that services prices are very high, at around 5% and 6%, and that hit negatively on developing economies and emerging economies.
Right. Mielani Mkabela, let's leave it there. He's an economist, and his forecast is in line with the polls. We are expecting to see rates remain unchanged this afternoon. That's it from the Midday Report. This is Khumutso Modise in for Mandy Wiener. Thank you so much for your contributions. We do it again tomorrow between 12 and 1 p.m.
This is Eyewitness News.
Good afternoon, I'm Mongezi Gogo. We begin in the courts, where cell phone records from the seven men accused of the murders of Keenan, a.k.a. Forbes, and Debelo Dibs Mutswane, have placed them at the point of interest on the day in question. A.k.a. and Dibs were gunned down outside Wish Restaurant on Florida Road the evening of February 10th last year. Five of the seven men are currently before the Durban Magistrates.